listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
You are?
I am, I think.
Really?
I think so.
You're a very attractive man. Do you
really?
Know that? Yeah. Am I supposed to say my name at this point?
I would suggest, yeah.
Okay. I am Paul Strolley, but I only wish I was Michael Sterling.
And as attractive.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of a given. And with the voice, too.
Well, something like that.
Because you got that voice.
Yeah, you think?
You know? Yes.
All right.
Well,
I'm going to do this with my voice. We'd like to thank our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services. Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, Paul, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
Our thanks also go out to PerformingArtsLive.com for their ongoing support of our live arts calendar. PerformingArtsLive.com is the most comprehensive such listing service in Southern California, enabling you to search events by date, category, and region.
And
we're thankful for them.
Indeed, we are in studio with us today.
Yes.
And ladies and gentlemen who are listening, we have two of Southern California's most prominent musical theater headliners. Not only are they both stars from the Broadway stage, but they are getting ready to open in the multiple Tony Award-winning Mel Brooks musical, The Producers.
Now, The Producers, what's this, a musical or something?
It would be April 8th through April 17th for Cabrillo Music Theater at the Cavalier Theater in the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza and Bank of America Performing Arts Center. And let's say hello to David Engel and Larry Rabin.
Oh,
yes. How nice, yes. Hi.
Welcome, both of you.
Thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Yes.
And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, this is something that, well, we'll talk about this later, but the fellows, I don't think we've had too many guests, Paul, have we, that have been in the same show? They've been our guests on this show and been in the same show?
No, we have on occasion. I can only think
very
of one.
Rare.
I think Cinderella was one of them when we had...
No, that's
we had,
right. Louis Welkenfeld, your producer,
yes,
was here.
Yes,
right.
And
Marsha Wallace. And
we've had a couple of people from...
And Sally.
And someone from the same television show, I thought. But no, we haven't. It's not common. It's not common.
That's nice. Well,
we're happy to be on.
And it's very common that we are often in the same show together.
Yeah.
We've been in
absolutely
a lot.
Which I think is very cool, actually, in your whole career and then the longevity of doing that. And you're still doing it, right? So
yeah,
it's all good.
I'd actually like to talk about that later on because I think that's very interesting because people always talk about working in the same office as somebody. If you see someone very frequently, it's sort of like, how does it go? Do you get tired of one another or just, you know?
No, not yet. It's been 22 years. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
There you go.
Really?
Yeah.
22
years. Isn't
in
that
the
right?
Trenches.
Yep. Yeah, that is right.
Well, this fall.
Right.
22 wonderful years.
Wonderful
yeah, 22
years.
Incredible years.
But it's amazing how often we do get paired together on stage. And
well, lucky you.
Together.
I think that's awesome.
Very, very.
Okay. Yeah, we choose
you know,
to do it, too.
This begs a good question. 22 years together. I'm with my wife, 21, okay? And actually, we've only been married for like 8 of that. But we were together for 21. This is my question. And tell me if you would find this to be an offensive comment. Because she said this to me, and she thought it was the sweetest thing, but it was all an inflection. Okay, it wasn't the words that were uttered. It was the way they were uttered. This is what she says to me. We're just sitting, we're watching TV, and she turns and she looks at me and she goes, you know, I really don't get tired of you. Now, tell me.
That's lovely.
No.
That is sweet.
See,
no.
I find it highly offensive.
Okay. Thank
no.
you.
How
Thank
can you?
Thank you so much. Because if we bisect this and only look at the words, which we got to talk about.
I know. It's backhanded. But
yeah. It's not, I don't get tired of you. It's, I really don't get tired of you. And the implication being the assumption is that one would get tired.
Of course. It's full of surprise.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Let's start.
Well, that is sweet. I mean, if you knew his wife, it could only be a sweet thing coming from that sweet woman.
I mean, my wife is a doll, and she's cherubic, and she's beautiful, and, you know, I mean, mocking Monica is like sucker punching the Easter Bunny. It's just not something that you do. She's a sweet woman, but I really don't get tired of you. I mean, she seemed more surprised than anybody with that comment. Anyway, Michael, how was your week?
Perhaps somebody had asked her.
What?
You know, perhaps somebody had asked her that question.
No. That was the other thing, that it occurred to her naturally. It was also offensive.
My week was busy, Paul, and wonderful at the club. Was busy last night and a great show. And more importantly, when I got home from the club last night, I had, I have to do this now these days, is record everything on the DVR, right? Or you don't get to see it on television.
Right, yeah.
So
exactly.
A few of the things that I watched, one of them being Celebrity Apprentice.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I watched last night. We watched it. And only to see the remaining celebrity players really are talk about being tired of one another.
Yeah. Well,
Meatloaf.
Yes, Meatloaf was on Simmer last night.
And
he was.
Gary Busey
clashed.
Oh, no. Wow.
In such an enormous... Well, tell them.
Well,
really.
It's just... And you know, not to sort of throw gasoline on the Drek fire, because, you know, with the whole Charlie Sheen thing that we've made a conscious effort not to talk about. But it's already unnerving when you have to look at Gary Busey anyway. Because the first time I saw Gary Busey was like, oh, someone taught a Clydesdale to walk erect. I think what they got. But then... Wow. Then you have Meatloaf. You have these two Texas shit kicker guys. Sorry, Michael. But you have these two, you know, they're like three years apart in age. They're just like, you know, rock and roll, you know, theater or acting bad boys. And and Meatloaf was like out of his mind. He was like a 4-year-old child screaming like a tantrum, and it was literally, "You stole my paint." Like tubes of paint, and of course it didn't turn out to be the case, but he was just like, it was so. I mean, when two people are arguing and you turn to Gary Busey and you go, "Guy's got some valid points," you know that the other guy's got to be off the chart.
Not other celebrities holding him down, Meatloaf, from actually physically harming Gary Busey. It was so bizarre.
It was.
And then there was later on in the program, of course, the payoff of that was that the two of them had a moment together where Meatloaf apologized.
Oh, how sweet.
Yes, Meatloaf apologized to Gary Busey, and then he throws off these non sequiturs, like there are these proclamations, and they're just like, they're just madness. It's just like, it's just like, well, Meat's a good guy, and you know, he's dancing on a rainbow, and he's got unicorns coming out of his ass. It's like, all right, Gary, I'm writing that down.
But, you know, more important, I think the strangeness of all of this stuff is reality television and how and why celebrities put themselves on the line like this and do these things.
Yeah.
Why do they do them?
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry.
Well, they have to be bored, right?
Yeah, that's probably it.
They're just, like, not enough people paying attention to them, so bad attention is better than no attention.
Yeah. It's just interesting because I worked for a talk show for years, and it's one thing to do the things that people talk about on talk shows, but it's something else entirely to voluntarily tell the nation that you did it.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things, that they're there to promote themselves, I can understand, but that they would consciously allow themselves to be presented in this light, I just don't understand. I mean, is it the celebrity that important?
Or maybe it's the paycheck. I don't know. Seriously, because the paycheck is hefty on those shows. I had a client, Scott Hamilton, who did it a couple seasons ago, and you know, he was bounced off second just for being a nice guy.
Well,
you know?
Oh,
too
nice.
So he laughed all the way to the bank.
Yeah.
Nice doesn't last.
But it has to be just more than that. It just puts them in the public eye, gets people talking about them.
But I mean, it's
bad press. And then the Weisslers can pick them up and put them in, you know, the next revival of Greece, right?
Exactly.
Right. It's very calculated.
Fran and Barry. God love them, right? So, at any rate, that was the weekend, Paul. But we have more important things at hand here, such as, ladies and gentlemen, our first guest
is the 6-time winner of the prestigious LA Stage Alliance Ovation Award, which I was nominated for and I didn't win, but I'm not better. Cabrillo audiences will remember him from the Andrews Brothers, White Christmas, and from his stellar performance in the Gene Kelly role in Singin' in the Rain. He has appeared on Broadway opposite Carol Burnett, personal hero of mine, in Putting It Together, as well as the original Broadway productions of Seussical the Musical and La Cage aux Folles. David created the role of Smudge in the original New York production of Forever Plaid, and again in Plaid Tidings. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. David Engel. This is our last show, David, where we're using some of these sound bites, so I'm going to try to fit... we've used them too much, but I'm going to try to fit them in.
That's a live audience, though.
Well, yeah, they're out in the lobby.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
Wow.
So we got a couple. So if they come in, don't let them throw you. It's just sort of, it's audio gravy, as they say. So, how are you?
I'm great.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Especially on a Monday, and we know that you're in the middle of serious rehearsals for the opening of the producers.
In serious rehearsals, but it's Mel Brooks is the producer, so it's not that serious. But we're having a great time. And the four of us that are the principal leads in it, we've done it together before, so it's just fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Michael Kostroff is playing Max. He's actually out on the road with Les Mis, and he got it in his contract. I was working with him this summer at Goodspeed Opera House, and he said he was going to turn the job down, the tour down, if they couldn't give him these weeks off to do the show.
Really?
It's just,
nice.
He just wants to come and play, yeah. And
yeah, we have it's a just great like a party together. With friends.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
No, we really love doing it together.
And you know what? That's one of those things that's just so palatable from an audience. The audience just, I mean, you can do a good performance, but when the people are up there and just they're together and they're digging one another, that just leaps off the stage. Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
In good ways and bad ways?
Michael says it's like having, acting with us. He goes, it's like having good sex. He just really enjoys it.
Now, what sort of production is that?
I know, right? Mel Brooks.
Good sex with us.
Yeah, with some variation on that, like a porn title. Mel Brooks, The Ho-Deucers. Is that too labored?
Something, yeah.
Is that too labored?
It's a stretch.
A little bit of a stretch.
The Prodictors?
Hey, thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. Would you say that again, please?
The Prodictors.
Thank you.
Gotta have it.
Should have been ready on that.
Strangely enough, neither Paul or I have ever
seen it?
The Producers. Never.
Wow.
I've never
Are you kidding?
I have not. Have not.
Did not see it.
Are you coming?
Yes.
Yes. Good. Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, this coming weekend. Yeah.
Good. Larry did it in New York. He stood by for Matthew Broderick, and then he headed the Vegas production. So he's had a lot of experience with it. Oh, I've only done it just once.
Did either of you ever work with Ron Orbach?
No, not
in this particular show, but I did Forum with him.
Oh, okay. Because Ron is a great friend of the show. He's an old friend of mine. We did a show in Chicago together, and boy, he has just that heartbreaking story about producing.
I know. Yeah. He's actually coming to see this production. He said it's the first time that he feels like he's at a really good place that he can
come
sit in the audience
seems
and
to
watch
be.
It.
And, I was just curious because it's amazing how this little universe just, you know.
You have to tell that heartbreaking story now so that people who don't know
very,
that story.
Very briefly, not to dwell on it, he was set to go to Broadway with the producer. In the role of
Franz Liebken, the Nazi,
and his knee blew his knee out and was unable to open on Broadway in the most successful show in history.
Yeah,
and then was eventually replaced by his understudy, and then I think he went back like a year later, and he did actually go in and perform the role. But I don't know if maybe it was the tour. Maybe it was,
Oscar that replaced him then got a Tony nomination.
Yes.
And as
Ron says.
And then took over for
Tony.
Max.
Yes.
And took over for
Max.
See, I didn't even know all of it. See, it just gets worse.
I know, it does. But Ron is the greatest guy.
Oh, yeah.
Boy,
fantastic.
What a hoot to be on stage.
Oh,
with him.
No. We did Laughter on the 23rd Floor together.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Right.
And he was Max Prince, and I was Kenny and in Chicago, and it was an absolute ball. But in honor, it was just I just really wanted to run that while you were saying, and then he won the Tony Award, and I didn't get the
news. Oh, shoot!
Yeah, you see
we're too fast.
You see why?
Larry's too fast.
You
this
are.
Is my segment,
yeah,
Larry.
You see why?
Get out of here.
Well, you gave him the cue.
But Ron ended up in a very good place. He's got a TV series. And
oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
And he's truly
a lovely man.
One of the funniest guys walking.
Yes, he is.
Oh,
God. Yes,
he's a great guy. He's a great guy.
We liked having
But let's talk about the people we have here rather than people.
Well, David, first of all, let's talk about, you know, what started let's go back to the beginning of your career and how you got started in all of this.
Oh, really?
Just run it through the highlights.
I've prepared this slideshow. If you'll all move your chairs.
It's funny that I'm even still in the business. I never really set out to be in it. I was just kind of playing, and I was a dancer, and I was dancing in TV shows and things like that, but really just for fun, thinking I would do something else. But then I got La Cage. On Broadway. I just got it by chance. Anyways, and I did that. And eventually then did a show that introduced me to James Raitt, who was working on this project called The Plaid Tones with Stuart Ross. Mm-hmm. And he wanted me to be involved with it. And so I did. That was the first time I ever sang. So I was actually truly untrained as a dancer, and I was dancing. And then I was untrained as a singer or actor, and I was kind of all on the job. But ended up doing Forever Plaid, and then that opened the doors to all these singing roles and acting roles, and then I didn't tell anybody I danced for a long time, and then when I came out here, and then ended up doing a production of Singing in the Rain, and then I started getting all these song and dance man roles, and gone back to New York and done Broadway shows, and I'm still doing it after 32 years, and so I'm still waiting for the ball to drop. And
now, when he says he's a dancer... He is an amazing dancer, actually.
Now, who did you do in La Cage?
Originally, I was Hannah from Hamburg.
Okay.
Which is the whip-wielding dominatrix. And I have done the show since then as Alban.
Okay. All right.
And won an award for it.
Well, yes, I did.
It
wasn't an Ovation Award. I was nominated for an Ovation.
It was the Boston Award. Area.
Yes.
Best Actor.
Yeah. Right. That's right. Thank you, Larry.
They could probably come up with a better name than that.
Well, it's called Ernie.
New England.
Actually, you know something?
No, it's I.
Boston Area Best Actor is sounding a lot better than the Ernie.
It's the New England Independent Critics.
New England
Critics Award.
Yeah.
Inquiry, something. Yes. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a very lateral award for the width of a plaque that has to go above.
No, I didn't get anything. I didn't even get anything. Just called me and told me I got it.
Can I ask you about working with Carol Burnett and what that was like?
Yeah.
All
ask
right.
away.
What was working with Carol Burnett?
Oh, all right. She is as delightful a person, and I'm not kidding. No. She is delightful a person as you would hope. She is absolutely what you want Carol Burnett to be like, and what she presents on television is who she is.
Yeah.
She's very, and I love this about her. She puts herself out there. To people, will talk to anybody, and it's exhausting for her actually, because she has to kind of save it up for performance. But everybody feels like they know her, and so they want to talk to her, and she will talk to you, and she's just so sweet. But
and it's genuine, and
still, genuine, just really good. And I never once ever saw her like misbehave or throw any kind of attitude. And at intermission every night, we would all gather in her dressing room and just it was like a little party, but it was so much fun. We'd all go get ready for the second act and then convene back in her dressing room and just laugh and play. And
now
that was the best part about doing that show, was that intermission.
Oh, I'm sure. Now, that production that you did with her, were you primarily a dancer in that? Was that early on? Or
No. This was 10 years ago.
Okay.
I it wasn't really a dance track. I actually covered... It's a five-person show, and it was Carol and George Hearn, John Barrowman, Ruthie Henschel, and Bronson Pinchot. Everybody had a single cover, except I covered John Barrowman and Bronson.
Okay.
And it was a limited four-month run, but out of it, I ended up doing three months on for John and Bronson. Because Bronson pulled a muscle opening night, and I was on for 6 weeks, and then John... And one performance, I went on for both of them at the same time.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah,
well, that's like the actor's nightmare. Huh?
Well, I had to go out one door and in another, and
they filmed that. Didn't I remember seeing that on cable?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's on DVD. And
okay, that's how I did.
And I have my performance.
Because I remember when you said Bronson Pinchot, and I put Carol Burnett and Bronson Pinchot together.
Right.
I said, I can't imagine there's a lot of shows with both of them in it.
My brush with Carol was that we studied in a class together with the musical theater class, really for singers who sang, and mostly for actors who wanted to sing. And she was amongst the stars, many stars that were in this class, Rock Hudson, Eve Marie Saint, and David, his last name just went right out of my head. The very famous,
David Engel?
No, not David Engel, not that famous.
Okay.
No, he was married to Nancy Walker.
David Walker.
I don't know.
No, you would know him. I'm embarrassed if I can't remember.
Nancy Walker, the bounty paper towel lady?
Yeah, Craig.
David Craig.
Okay.
And Carol was in the class. And the reason that she was in the class was because she had the TV series at the time, is that she had a problem singing in front of people. It intimidated her to sing in front of people on television, going out to millions of people. And she was working out those kind of reservations and fears that she had.
Wow, but she already had her own television show.
She was doing it, yeah.
Wow. That's interesting.
And every week you'd see some improvement in her performance. And in David's class, you didn't stay in the class until he kicked you out of the class, until you got it all.
Okay. Wow.
You know, so it was a pretty and but I brought it up only because she is possibly one of the nicest ladies on the planet.
Absolutely.
And she is so real, and even in that environment with other celebrities and certainly those of us who were just, you know, students, everybody was treated the same, first of all, and, you know, by David. So it made all of the celebrities treat everybody alike, but she in particular.
She's a real
very
human
kind
being,
and
a real great person.
Very interested in everybody else's work,
yes.
And very much, you know, would speak to you. And
never liked her. Never did.
One great thing is being on stage when something technically would go wrong, and she would stop the show and say, you know, you paid to have this work, so we're going to make that work, but in the meanwhile, let's bring up the house lights and talk to the audience.
Oh, really?
You know, and she would do that whole banter back and forth with the audience, and it was magic to be next to.
Yeah. Oh, and you know, that's just, I mean, as good as the show is, that's one of the stories that people will
people
leave.
Love it.
Now, interesting, one of the things that you said, I had mentioned about the thing being filmed, and we were talking earlier about Forever Plaid. Now, the production that you were in of Forever Plaid, that was filmed? Or was that...
Well, it wasn't the production was filmed. Three of the four originals and Daniel Reichert from Jersey Boys, we shot the movie 2 years ago.
Yeah. Okay.
We shot it over a week period. And then we did it in front of a live audience, and that was all shot and was all put together. And it had a theatrical release last summer, and it is now all over the country on PBS right now.
Oh, really?
On American Public Television, yeah.
Now, so is it a staged, is it like styled like a film, or is it a film of the stage production?
It is a film of the stage production, but it's very cinematic.
But
and
you got
there's
some...
And there's animation in it and special effects that make it more than just a, you know, the film of... shot of the
Because there's always, and which is wonderful, because there's always something lost when you try to replicate just a stage play. And
you can't just put a camera out there and shoot it. It has to be done.
Well, you can, it just sucks.
Yeah.
You
know? We were lucky, though, you know, after doing it 6 days, you know, just in the studio, to get a live audience. Then at the end of that experience, we had two live audiences that they then intercut into the film.
Oh, okay.
So, yes,
and by the way, Larry is in it
half
as well.
Are you really?
Yes,
oh.
Quarter of the cast.
That is how we met 22 years ago.
Is that why he was holding the sign up? I wasn't sure what that was about. but ask about the Plaid film? What is that? I can't really read it. No, I'm kidding. He's not holding up the sign.
So, yeah, it's airing now all over the place. And then if people pledge, they can get the DVD. But it's not released yet. But in August, it will finally be available to purchase.
Oh, good.
And the CD. And it's really a beautiful, beautifully shot film.
Okay, because, you know, it's funny. I didn't get my complimentary copy.
I know.
Maybe still in your bag?
It actually is.
Okay.
We'll get to that. But that's so great that he was a part of something that really kind of changed your life, right?
It totally did.
Oh, sure. Sounds like it did.
And it's really become like the jukebox musical that everybody...
spun off of.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah. It's the most popular jukebox musical of all time.
All of the number of the girl shows, the
Wonderettes,
all that. It's you know what it is? It's sort of the musical equivalent of Tony and Tina's Wedding. It's like you had the Tony and Tina's Wedding idea, and then everyone sort of tried to recreate it later with, you know, varying the theme and everything. But the process is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Is that an unpleasant comparison?
I don't know that show, so I.
Oh. Tony T's Wedding was like the first interactive theater piece where the audience is attending an Italian wedding. And that's the way it worked. The audience would come, and basically they redid it with different styles. It became a bar mitzvah. It became an Irish wake. It became all these different things like that. But it sounds very similar that, you know, you get that one thing that just really is lightning in a bottle, and as always, people try to...
Yeah, absolutely. And who knew? I mean, you know, when we first started it was like trying to get people... to come when we were workshopping it. We would do it like twice a week at Steve McGraw's in New York. And it was we play these four dead guys singing elevator music, and it was just like it was a hard sell. And now everybody knows Forever Plaid, and it is you put that on a marquee and it sells.
Yeah.
People just keep coming, and after all these years, it's still going strong everywhere.
I must confess that when it played Los Angeles, I literally saw it once in the so blown away by it, I probably ended up taking people back to see it or seven times.
That was always what happened. That's why we ran here for 2 years.
It just was exponential.
2 years.
Yeah.
Was that the Cannon Theater?
The Cannon Theater.
And we ran it in 6 months in London, and we had a long run.
And people from outside this town really need to know that any live theater that runs in L.A. for 2 years is like running 10 years anywhere
else. Yeah, we were in a 400-seat theater, and we ran full for 2 years. Yeah. Yeah, that's huge here.
Because I saw the touring production with Meatloaf and Gary Busey.
Nice.
I didn't care for it. Yeah. I didn't care for it. Yeah. It was very hostile.
I loved Billy Bob Thornton, his jokes.
Well, we're going to tell people how to see this show more than once, but we're going to remind you right now that it is at Cabrillo Music Theater at the Fred Cavalli Theater at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza in Thousand Oaks, California, and it opens Friday, April 8th, and plays through Sunday, April 17th, starring one Mr. David Engel and Mr. Larry Rabin.
And that is the producers. That's not Forever Party.
Yes, that is Mel Brooks,
the producers. Yes.
And in fact, David Engel, I play Roger Debris. Larry plays Leo Bloom.
Yes, and directed by our good friend Stephen Glaudini.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't get any better than that to have the three of you involved in the same production.
Thank you.
Well, we do laugh a lot.
We do. Mm-hmm.
And with Louis Welkenfeld, who's probably one of the great producers in Los Angeles, right?
Absolutely.
We had him on the phone, didn't we?
Or we had him in person here.
We did have him in the studio?
We did.
Okay, I apologize to you, Louis.
And Louis is also a great director.
Yeah,
yes, he is.
Directs
he
as well,
is.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then there's Carol. I mean, we could go on. Carol Nussbaum. I mean, who raises money better than that woman? Right?
Nobody.
although, you know, this is... She is now... She has taken another position at some...
She is now president emeritus of Cabrillo Musical Theater, and she is starting on a new venture, which has not been announced yet, but so we are in transition.
Really?
Yeah, you didn't know that. Yeah.
No, I did not
she
know
She is
that.
Going to be there opening night of producers, but I think that's
the end of her duties.
Is she going to announce what this new position is?
We all hope so. We're on pins and needles.
Yeah. Supposedly it's a big deal.
Yeah, but anything she puts her energy toward is going to do
and
great.
And she's phenomenal.
They're lucky to have her.
Well, her wardrobe alone.
Well, there's that.
We'll have to post
Barbie doll. David wears something like that.
In the show. I do. Yes, absolutely. But
out of curiosity, because The Producers of the Movie is one of my favorite films.
The original?
The original.
Yeah,
the original with nothing against Zega, but Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder.
Right.
Yeah,
and
brilliant.
Does Roger, who's, is it
Christopher?
Carmen Gia is the
common law assistant.
The common law assistant. Yes. And is that line, white, 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 it's the color of our carpet, is
it's
that still in?
Not.
Oh,
no, I'm so sorry.
I know.
Now you're not going to come.
What? No, The movie is like hysterical and so dated, but so, you know, it's just one of those things where it's just to commit so much to a premise like that and take those risks with something like that. I mean, The Producers of the Film is a microcosm of the idea behind Springtime for Hitler, which is sort of like, we got to go at this full bore and risk everything.
And it's less than 25 years after World War II. I mean, that's when you actually really think when he was writing it, that he had his, you know, ass out the bus window.
Yeah. Yes.
All
right. Yes. I was never a Nazi. Yeah. I love my adopted country. A beautiful, fair spacious. Kills me. Kenneth Mars, who we just lost recently.
Did it? Oh,
what
really?
A
yes.
Loss.
That's right.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Shall we pay the bills, Michael?
We should, indeed, Paul.
Excuse us, gentlemen. We have a live arts calendar we're going to do, and I will kick it off if that's okay, Michael.
Please.
Before the Backstreet Boys and Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, there was a fictional male quartet called the Plaid. Sparky, Smudge, Jinx, and Frankie, destined to harmonize their way to greatness, this dynamic quartet performs the show that never was during the Costa Mesa Playhouse's presentation of Forever Plaid, April 8th through May 8th, a charming musical fantasy about the four young, eager members of a 1950s close harmony boy band who, killed in a car crash on the way to their first gig, are allowed to return from the afterlife for one night to perform their dream concert, featuring many pop hits from the 50s. I've heard about this show before. The show's memorable score include Three Coins in the Fountain, 16 Tons, and Love is a Many Splendored Thing, to name but a few.
And that was really quite coincidental that this is being promoted on today's show, but it certainly speaks to the product, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's sure
probably
does.
Being done 100 different places in the country.
Many
at the same
imposters
time.
Are doing it.
Absolutely.
They're forever doing it.
That's right.
Yes. The faux plaids.
Burn this.
But no, we're thrilled that they are. Love it.
That's a rather extreme reaction, don't you? Oh, I'm sorry. It's
I'll burn it later.
Yeah. Burn This, currently on stage through May 1st at the Center Theater Group's Mark Taper Forum, downtown Los Angeles, had its world premiere in the Taper's 1986-87 season. It then moved to Broadway in 1987 and helped ignite the careers of John Malkovich and Joan Allen. This passionate modern classic by Pulitzer Prize winner Lanford Wilson is about a dancer-choreographer named Anna, who has lost Robbie, her best friend and collaborator, in a tragic accident. Robbie's brother, Pale, a power keg lost in his own way, arrives at Anna's doorstep in the middle of the night. Pale is dangerous, sexy, raw, and demanding, and he interrupts the course of Anna's existence, bringing major changes to her life. Again, Burn This is on stage now at the Mark Taper Forum through May 1st. Don't miss it.
And for more information about the events in our arts calendar, you can visit either stateoftheartsla.com, that's stateoftheartsla.com, or performingartslive.com, where you can also check out what's happening in Southern California every day of the week. And just make sure you go to the right theater, because I just had I just thought of someone going to Forever Plaid and actually getting Burned This. And you probably couldn't get farther apart.
That's true.
Mildred, this is not the way they described it. When's he going to start singing?
Sorry.
There's an accident in both plays.
It's okay.
So some common thread there. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our next guest is thrilled to return to Cabrillo Music Theater after co-starring in The Andrew Brothers, for which he received an L.A. Stage Alliance Ovation Award.
I don't want to talk about the ovations anymore.
His
okay?
third such award, Paul. He is distinguished for replacing Matthew Broderick as Leo Bloom in the Tony Award-winning musical The Producers on Broadway, the entire Las Vegas run, and in L.A. at Musical Theater West, actually in Long Beach, California. He, too, is an alumni of the Off-Broadway London and L.A. companies of Forever Planned, as we discussed earlier. Please welcome Mr. Larry Rabin.
Yeah! Oh, I like that sound effect better. Yeah.
Well, we got one more for you. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, please.
You want to give him the introduction again, just his name?
Certainly, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome Mr. Larry Rabin.
Rockstar.
Takes you back, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Takes you right back.
Good.
Yes. Nice.
Welcome.
Thank you very
much, Larry. Not only is he a gifted singer and actor, and he is also a very gifted director.
Thank you.
And has, I think, David, when you did Sing in the Rain, you were the director.
Yeah, he
correct?
Was the director.
I was his director.
You did choreography.
I did the choreography, and I was Don.
Don Lockwood,
the Gene Kelly role.
Gene Kelly role. Right.
Exactly. So, Larry, let's talk about this. I mean, you've had a life with this show, with the producers.
Yeah.
A long life with the producers.
A really good long life. I went into it on the second anniversary on Broadway and did it there for a couple of years and then did it in Vegas for a year and a half. And now I have done 6 regional productions. Leo Bloom is my favorite role ever. It's... You know, where else does the quirky guy get the 6'2" girl?
Yeah. She's 6'2".
She is 6'2" barefoot.
Really?
Yeah. 5'14" is
Sarah Cornell. She's brilliant.
What's that Don Rickles line? I love a tall broad. You get a pick and you yodel.
Yeah, she is a human jungle gym. Yeah, you know, so I get the girl. I get to sing. I get to dance. I get to be an absolute lunatic. So it's great. And the show has real heart. So I love doing it.
Replacing Matthew Broderick.
Yes.
Okay. One of the things. What is? I'm just curious because suffering from anxiety disorder myself, I always think of episodes like that as being real triggers.
Well, so I was always an understudy in New York, and I played the role a lot. But it is when people are coming expecting a certain celebrity. You know, it's a lot to live up to because the moment you step out, they're already disappointed. You know. And then, so you're climbing that mountain. But thank God the way that Mel wrote it and Susan Stroman directed it, if you just stick to your guns, it's pretty foolproof.
And that had to be just such a joy to go into that role and have it be your own after. I didn't realize you had understudied it for so long leading up to that.
I also got to play Carmen Gia, so that was fun. I got to do that on stage with Nathan and Matthew and Gary Beach. And, yeah, I mean, just the greatest playground ever.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So to get to take over and originate the role then in Las Vegas was really dreamy and get to have my own company.
Now, did you work with David Hasselhoff then in
Las
Vegas?
I did.
You did.
And Tony Danza.
Well, you got to talk about David a little bit.
Well, don't David.
You know, David is actually a really, really good guy. And I have to tell you, it was Roger DeBree's first entrance is in a $20,000 dress. And people were not expecting David Hasselhoff to come out in a dress. So it was 45 seconds of people just pissing themselves.
Because the ads for it was just him in a tuxedo.
Yeah.
So they didn't.
Oh.
Yeah, they didn't expect it.
They didn't reveal
especially
it.
Especially all of his European fans. Yeah. So that was good. You know, he worked really hard. The last week that he was in Vegas was the hamburger incident. So.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I lived through all of that and the media spin on it, which was unbelievable to watch how they took that and made it other things.
All right. Are you going to reveal?
No, okay, no, no, no.
Why
no.
not? This but, is the perfect place to
oh
do it. It's
gosh.
All between friends.
Oh,
really.
Yeah.
Who are we going to tell?
Yeah. I'll just say that the story that most people know is slightly warped from the truth.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But anyway, but he's a good guy. He worked very hard, and I wish him all the best.
There was a production of Jekyll and Hyde.
He did
yeah,
that.
Oh,
he did
yeah. on Broadway.
Yeah.
And they filmed it.
Yeah.
He's the one.
Sadly,
that
yes, they filmed it.
It's worth it for the curtain call. Have you watched the curtain call?
Yes.
The camera follows him from the wings, yes. and yeah. high kicks right at the camera, oh. and comes
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
perfect.
I think it's fantastic.
I missed the curtain call because I was adjusting the Thorazine drip at that time, so I was medicated.
I think it was kind of fitting that he ended up on America's Got Talent
and then
got booted off the show. Don't you think?
He did?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. It was kind of fitting. And Tony Danza also came in and did the Vegas run.
Did he?
Yes.
Oh, tell me about the experience with Tony Danza, because I have a dark history with Mr. Danza. But
We all have a dark history with Mr. Danza.
I can't really talk about it legally, and so long as I'm not within 500 feet of him, I'm fine. But
God.
Tell me about what that was like. He seems to be a fairly genuine fellow.
Oh, God, he's a sweetheart. I had the greatest time with him. He really, really fully embraced me. My favorite thing was during intermission and sometimes a half hour before the show, you'd hear him in his dressing room, which was next to mine, playing the ukulele. It's what he loves to do. He's got like 300 songs that he sings. He does them in his club act, but... You know, just you think of him being, you know, this tough Golden Gloves kind of guy, and he really is just a sweetheart.
Really?
And there, yeah, just singing his old songs.
What threw me was club act. He has a club act.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's performed at Feinstein's in New York. He's got a
he's real
column.
He's headlined
Vegas. Tap dances.
Yeah.
Really?
He plays the youth.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. He's
you didn't
a
know
real
that
song and dance guy.
I didn't know that about
really?
Tony Danza. No.
Yeah?
No. I love that. Did you ever see the video clip of the viral video of Tony Danza when the mic, he doesn't know the
morning
mic is
show?
On? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's on a morning show and he's just so, I mean, and it's like, it's not even like it's like you're watching a celebrity have a tantrum or anything. It's just, it's very real. It's just like, you know, these people and his mic was on and it's very, very funny. Do a YouTube search for
it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Have you seen it? And then halfway through he starts eating a hamburger, but we'll talk about that.
Well, you can't just leave us all hanging.
I've only seen it once, but basically he's just talking about the nature of a lot of these insipid morning shows,
yeah.
right? And it's
yeah.
just like, much like what we're doing right now. but just it is, you know, how he has to crank them out like sausages, and he just has to do these things. And it's just, it's not mean-spirited or anything.
It's truthful. It's truthful in a way that
right.
you wouldn't
it, it's,
want people
it's
to hear
truth
your conversation.
That you never
he
see.
Did not know this was going out live.
Yeah, right, right,
time.
Exactly.
So he thought
exactly.
it was going to break.
It was a little like Reagan and the nuclear comment, you know.
Except it was Tony Danza on a
yeah.
morning show.
But yes, yeah, exactly.
Well, he's you know what I do appreciate about him? He actually can act. I mean, he is a good actor.
Yes.
I mean,
sir.
I've seen him do things that... No. One would not expect this guy would be capable of doing these things on
yeah.
television, his, you know, the various series that he's been on. And, you know, he's worth his salt on that. As far as a singer is concerned, he's a modest singer and he's a modest dancer, I think.
He's
so charming.
Charmer.
And that does come across.
And it was a very different Max Bialystock. He was, you know, a warmer, cuddlier Max, you know, so these old ladies, you know, getting fucked by him. It made it a slightly different story, but a good, authentic, it still worked.
Well, that was the harder title to sell, because I think the working title of Producers was I Fuck Tony Danza, and then they decided to revisit that.
Oh, my God. Let me ask you something. You are a director. You're working with people like this, who we're talking about now, and you're a director, so, and you're both actors on top of it. How do you look, you know, when you're not in that position, but you're working with them as an actor, do you look at them differently because you are a director?
Well, I really try to separate them out, because there's nothing more annoying than have an actor within the cast try to direct the other actors or
right.
usurp your authority. You know, you really want somebody with a clean artistic eye out front. Right. So, right. I mean, I will take a director aside and say, I'm noticing this going on, but I'll do it quietly and say, you know, it's your call if you're up for it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to keep them separate.
You can't. Yeah. I don't think any of us, even if you were even just an actor, can't help but kind of want to direct a little bit. But if it's not your place, you don't. You just.
But the intention, and it's an interesting point, because the intention is always it. More often than not, people think that actors are egocentric, and a lot of us are. But the goal is I want the show to be better.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the reason it's a bit of a dance, because you want to, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully you're working with a director that has opened it up as a creative forum. It's right. not just you go here, you do that, you say it this way. It's, you know, hopefully everyone is collaborative up to that point.
And you know what? Larry mentioned in this rehearsal process, because he's seen me in rehearsal processes where I've been really frustrated because everything's not as the way it should be or perfect. When I can control it. And he said he's amazed how happy I am during this process. And I said, that's because everything is, like, great. I mean, Matthew Vargo, who is setting the show, all the choreography, he is immaculate with it. I mean, it's perfect. He knows every little detail, and everything is being taken care of. Steve Gladini, I mean, the two of them, they are, yeah. It's... The show is, like, so good. It's so perfect. And so,
that really,
I'm so happy.
That would
They're
say
doing
something
their jobs.
Anyway, but it means something, especially with someone who has the history with the show that you do. You know, it's encouraging to hear.
They're doing great. And we're finding new stuff, which is fun, too. You know, the whole Susan Stroman machine in New York, she is brilliant. But the show is absolutely set. It has a loose feel, but... You know, so it's nice to be able to think, you know, I've always thought if we maybe tried this and to throw some new stuff in it, it's keeping it interesting for us.
Oh, okay. So then if people did see it, there's a chance that they'll see
some new... there's some new little details.
I think that's fantastic. So I look so forward to seeing it.
Great.
This weekend. I'll be there.
And, the original Broadway sets and costumes and direction and choreography.
I want to plug it again, Michael, so that people can know how to get their tickets for this.
Before we do, though, let's just talk to Larry a minute. I wanted to ask him one thing.
Oh, please
about
do.
He and David have a very interesting theater company, Paul.
We
Paul also has a theater company here in Los Angeles,
you
which is
do.
Fantastic, called Seaglass Theater.
Seaglass Theater,
oh,
yes.
Excellent, yes.
Yeah. And they did beautiful, beautiful work.
Wow.
And David and Larry's company is called Coyote Stageworks in Palm Springs.
That's right, but we're non-competitive. We went out to the desert to make
sure
step on your toes.
We wouldn't push you unless you were at least Palm Springs. Any farther out, we'll promote anything. Anywhere else, a conflict of interest.
And they are getting ready to do a production called Falling for Eve.
Oh, actually, Falling for Eve is a show that a new musical that I directed off Broadway in New York last summer by Tony Award winner Joe DiPietro. So they're actually different. I'm hoping we'll get a chance to do Falling for Eve. Finished doing Fully Committed, which David starred in, and it was directed by New York director Joel Bischoff, who is also brilliant.
Very fun.
So that was our third show. We had done Greater Tuna and Tuna Christmas, both of which Larry directed.
And do you have your own space out there, or is it sort of a nomadic company?
We don't. We're talking right now with the Annenberg about being the resident professional company there.
And they're very excited about
us. Yeah, we want to build a South Coast Rapper Laguna Playhouse actually out in the desert. They don't have one currently.
Right.
So we've used different spaces in the three productions up to this point.
It's nice to hear that sort of theater is going on out there, and it's nothing against Palm Springs for me, but Palm Springs, you do get a lot of review type things. You do get a lot of, you know, showy, touristy butts in seats type things. And this sounds like great cabaret in Palm Springs.
Absolutely.
But this sounds
Different than what else? What did they have?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Artistic director Chuck Yates really saw that there is this void that could be filled, and so we're stepping in, and the community is getting behind us.
They are really getting behind it. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Well, and Larry, you're going to be directing The Wedding Singer also at Musical Theater West in Long Beach.
Yeah,
we love that.
Happening in July, it's going to be the regional premiere.
And then you're working together, guys, in doing Sunset Boulevard. Where are you doing that?
Yes,
oh, okay, we're doing that together too.
Gateway Playhouse on Long Island. I'll be directing. David's going to choreograph.
And we're
going to
be doing Andrews Brothers right after the producers at the Norris Theater. We're both doing that together
from
too.
April 29th until May 15th,
along with our other original cast. Forever Plaid cast member Stan Chandler.
That's right.
And Betts Malone.
Betts Malone rounding out the cast.
No, it's really a shame you're not busy.
Oh, my God.
It's Nepal. As long as I've known them, which has been just a couple of years, it's always been this. Yeah. Always.
Listen, no, people don't realize this. They don't stop. I mean, you're actually darning socks while we're just nonstop.
We're incredibly grateful. We're incredibly lucky. And yeah.
Well, and you're incredibly good, because you wouldn't be as busy otherwise.
Yes. Why, thank
absolutely.
You.
So, Paul, now we can tell them about the producers once again. Do you want to talk about that?
No, would you talk about
it? I will.
Because
it opens
you're
Friday, April 8th, and it runs through Sunday, April 17th. Performance is a Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Note, this is a new time for that theater, ladies and gentlemen. Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Saturdays and Sundays at 2 p.m. A post-show discussion with cast, staff, and audience will follow the Saturday, April 9th, 2 p.m. performance. So tickets are now on sale and may be purchased at the Thousand Oaks Evergarden Plaza box office and or by Ticketmaster, or any location, of course, or by phone, 800-745-3000. And tickets may also, you may find out more about how to purchase tickets by calling area code 805-449-2787. Once again, that's 805-449-2787.
Okay, gentlemen, this is the final 5 minutes of the show where we usually ask people about their nightmare theater stories.
Yeah. All right.
And, you're neither one of you, but are very, very excited. So much so, we're doing the drum roll effect to facilitate this.
Larry,
who wants to kick it off?
My worst nightmare was actually in college. I was doing a production of The Matchmaker. I was Barnaby. And
is it the fart story?
No.
Okay.
Oh, no, no, no. And
thank you, David.
I just love the fact that there's
many fart stories.
But I was just going to say, the look said, you're going to have to be more specific.
Barnaby and Cornelius don't enter for the first 30 minutes of the play, and we had to enter from a trap in the stage. So this other actor and I had to get actually down into the trap before the house opened. So we spent an hour down there. And my nose, you used to look at it and it would bleed, right? And I'm in a white costume. You see where this is going.
Yes.
So John Parra, who's the actor, who's a grad student, I have no idea whatever happened to him. But he used to do this thing called the nose suck to freak people out. He would grab them by their chin and their forehead and put his mouth over their nose and just go, just to freak people out. So he does this to me in the pit of the theater. So I'm talking not a little trickle of blood. I am hemorrhaging blood for 25 minutes before having to make an entrance.
Oh my
God. And I step up out of the trap, blood everywhere, blood on my costume, blood on the stage. I'm just talking like nothing is going on. I go off stage to make a 40-second costume change, and I'm on for the next 30 minutes still bleeding.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
Did you get lightheaded, or
I had packed so much tissue up into my nose when I finally could make the costume change that I thought like I was talking like this, and my nose was all swollen out and blood was still dribbling down my face. So that was my worst nightmare.
See, because when I was in college and someone pulled me backstage for the nose suck, it had a completely different route.
The nose suck.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, that's amazing. I did not know you were going to tell that story, because mine is a nose story as well.
Oh, well, tell it
really.
Oh,
really?
Nose. No. Tell it fast so we can get to the fart story.
That okay, great. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, there's lots of those. Okay, so when we first did, and this is during Forever Plaid, when we first brought it out to California, in like 91, 92, 93, something like that, I was like going to the beach every day, just loving being at the beach, and I was riding the waves, and the waves would like tousle me, and I would get all this like seawater like kind of lodged up in my sinuses, and it would find the worst time to just release. It would just like hold it there, and then so at, we were on stage, and there's this point we bring the woman up to play Heart and Soul, and then we ask her to sign the plaid book of life, and then we have it pass it around for everybody else to sign it. Well, I open up the plaid book of life, and I said, will you sign your name here? And then just released, just like this cup of water just pours out of my nose onto the book, and I couldn't explain it away, and I go, oh, sorry, and would you pass this around for everybody else to sign it too? And of course, we got it back without a signature. That night, nobody touched it.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Oh, my God.
But that's so funny. We both had like nose.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, so we have time for your story.
I
thought it was something about it down in there farting and then opening it up, but that wouldn't be. Okay, no, here's a good one. Okay, so Bob Lambert was playing Frankie in the show, and
Steve Gunderson was playing
Sparky, and Bob had broccoli between shows, and he was like really gassy, and so finding all these little moments in the show, like laughter points and applause, to just let him rip. And there's a one guaranteed,
one guaranteed laugh.
Yes, yeah. but Bobby plays Frankie. You have to remember that his name is Frankie in the show. And there's a guaranteed laugh at the end of the show where it goes.
Sparky says, "The emergency room. There's always a big
laugh."
Big laugh.
Of course, there was no laugh, but there was quite a loud fart. And Steve Gunderson just turns up to Bobby, who is playing Frankie, and just goes, Bob. He didn't want the audience to think it was him, but he didn't even call him by his character name.
And then Bob. Yes, and then the character Frankie had to deliver a 2-minute monologue.
Oh, and the guys couldn't, you know, hold it together.
No,
the whole last song was all just the baritone line and nobody else because somebody was laughing. Oh, yes.
Okay. Classy times.
Gentlemen, so lovely to have you here.
Thank you. Happy
Absolutely.
To be here.
It flew by all too fast.
Yes, I can't believe that.
You want to tell them about who we have next week?
Yes. In the next couple of weeks, our guests will include longtime associate musical director of American Idol, Michael Orland. Good to have him back.
Cool.
Funny man. Very funny. Tony Award nominee as Best Actor in a Musical, John Tartaglia from Avenue Q.
Right. Allie Willis, one of pop and Broadway's most prolific and celebrated award-winning composers, having penned such hits as September, Boogie Wonderland, Neutron Dance, I'll Be There for You, the theme from the television series Friends, and Broadway's timeless musical, The Color Purple.
Along with Academy Award winner Richard Sherman, composer of such motion picture scores as Mary Poppins, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, The Jungle Book, The Slipper and the Rose, and the iconic Disney hit, It's a Small World After All. Thank you both, gentlemen, for joining us.
Thank you.
Very delighted to have you.
We'll do this again.
Really
will you come back?
Yeah, of course.
Please do.
Okay.
Please do. And go see the producers. And
thank you, Paul.
We will see you. Nice to see you, Michael, and we'll see you next week on the radio.
See you on the radio.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.